God has something for us all to do. Now, Nehemiah had no idea that he was going to have this task. This task was a surprise to Nehemiah and the distress that he felt. So once he proceeded to go, once he got in his mind that I'm going, there was no turning back. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the group, what the gang was going to say.
Hi, this is Holly, and welcome to Study with Friends. This is part two in our series on the book of Nehemiah, and we're talking about different roles of leadership and the ways that we can learn from what Nehemiah did in rebuilding the wall in Jerusalem. If you miss any part of this program or you want to hear it again, please get to our website, studywithfriends.org, and search Nehemiah in the search box. You can listen there online or search us on iTunes. That's studywithfriends.org. While you're there on the website, click on your favorite social media channel in the upper right-hand corner to follow us for daily inspiration from God's Word. We're active on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
The question itself, like, he may not have said, oh, I'm going to bring this up to the king mm-hmm. today, but when the opportunity arose, you know, he had been praying about it, had been in his heart for so long that he was ready mm-hmm. and confident to make that request.
What else do you think about that? There's so much to that. And I want to talk about Esther in a second, because similar circumstances went down. But what else did you write in that section of the homework? So it's in verses 4 and 5. The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my fathers are buried so that I can rebuild it. It just struck me as I was doing the writing that I thought, I don't know, it resounded for me personally, because in times when I'm within God's will and doing things his way, I am waiting on him to prepare my heart and to prepare the hearts around me for something that's coming next, that I have to make a change or make a request or have a difficult conversation. I wait and I pray. And it doesn't say that, it doesn't really tell us about the 700. Like in Daniel, we see God talk. Daniel talked to God about this. Daniel talked to God about that. But we don't really see that in Nehemiah. We don't really see Nehemiah saying, God prepared my heart. But I can tell you there's a sameness to the experience that he has here. I mean, even in my marriage or with my kids or with a friend at work, I can think of times at work I've had to have a difficult conversation. If I rush into that difficult conversation, it goes wrong. But what I've learned, and I say this to my kids all the time, if it's the right thing to say, it'll still be the right thing to say tomorrow. If it's not the right thing to say, that'll be clear by tomorrow. And the waiting, waiting is hard.
I'm a terrible waiter.
It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
And I think that we're less accustomed to waiting than we've ever been culturally. Mm-hmm. Nothing. We don't have to wait for anything.
No.
Our kids don't have to wait for anything. And so waiting is hard. I actively look for ways to make my kids wait because I know they have no practice at it. Google, iPhone, everything's fast. Everything, Snapchat, it's all quickety quick. And there's wisdom in waiting, because really that is the truth. If it is the right thing for Nehemiah to do, it's still going to be the right thing in 4 months. Mm-hmm. We don't know when it occurred to him that this might be the thing. It might have been. It might have been that it just occurred to him when the king asked, but that God was working on Nehemiah's heart. And then when the king opened the door, he said his prayer and God revealed to him, this is what you're going to do. It could have been right there on the spot, but his heart was ready. You see my point? Yeah. And so we don't know. Yes. That's why I wanted us to just play with it a little bit. There's no way to know. But what we do know is the procedure is sound.
Yeah.
He had been praying about it, because we see in verse 4 of chapter 1, for some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven.
Yeah.
And we see his prayer there. And then 4 months later, we see the moment where he asks, the door is flung wide. The king's heart is prepared. Who knows what's up with that king? We don't know a lot about, I mean, he was not a godly king. We know that.
Right.
Waiting is hard, but it's the right thing to do. Wisdom waits. There's a lot there.
Yeah, I pretty much wrote what Cassie said, that, and my Bible, I have a study Bible, actually has a note saying it was a spontaneous prayer to God. But I did not put that as my response. My response was, no, it was not spontaneous for that reason, that I went back to, well, he was fasting, he was praying, he was mourning. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was 4 months. Thank you. But I knew it was months.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, to me, he was preparing. Mm-hmm. God was preparing. He was preparing. He was waiting before the Lord. Mm-hmm. He was. And then, yes, this was a spontaneous moment.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, he saw that moment and knew it for what it was.
Gosh, have you ever been in that moment where something goes down?
Yeah.
And you do quick say that prayer. You're like, oh, I know I need to talk about this right now, but give me 20 seconds before I open my mouth to get right with the Lord on it. You know what I mean? Like that to me is, that just shows Nehemiah's heart. But I have done that too, where I'm just like, oh, someone just asked me a question. I'm just like, God, get up in this right now because I'm going to need you right there. So I get that. I get that. But he has a heart for prayer that we see prior to that. So I think there's a lot that you can toy around with. And I don't want to spend a ton of time, but we can think of a similar situation that Esther had. And she had asked her people to pray and fast before she went before the king. Mm. Although her intention was to go to the king and ask. We don't know that Nehemiah has that same indication from God that that's what's supposed to happen. We don't know that he doesn't, but we just don't know like we do in Esther. Like we saw her preparation and say, I'm going to do it. And if I die, I die. It's one of my favorite things in the Bible. If I perish, I perish. Mm-hmm. Go Esther. So an interesting, similar situation. And I think it bears noting, you're not allowed to even talk to the king without permission. So many things had to fall into place. Okay. So later in chapter 2, the tide turns. Nehemiah starts to face some stinkers who aren't interested in his good results. What I want to look at is specifically 2:20. The thing about these questions is I ask these questions and I'm not sure if you see where I'm going with it, but that's okay because sometimes you go someplace that I didn't have in mind and it's better. So let's figure that out. But what I noticed about verse 2:20, Cassie, would you read chapter 2, verse 20 for us, sure, please?
I replied, "The God of heaven will help us succeed. We, his servants, will start rebuilding this wall, but you have no share, legal right, or historic claim in Jerusalem."
Okay. Right before this, we see that he's being mocked and ridiculed by Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem. So I don't know who those guys are. I mean, it says a little bit about who they are, and obviously they have some say, but they're giving him a hard time. Do you see where I was going with that? Can you tell me what you wrote in your homework? What I asked was, consider the retort in 2:20 that Nehemiah says, and specifically the order of the contents of his response. What did you get from that?
Well, I wrote in my notes, God is the one that gives us success. Nehemiah is clear on that. And Nehemiah is also clear on the fact that you have to have a plan. God knows what he wanted, and he needed hands and feet to move the people. So regardless of what Tobias and Sanballat and the gang, whatever they had in mind, God's plan was going to proceed in spite of.
Mm-hmm.
And God has something for us all to do. Now, Nehemiah had no idea that he was going to have this task. This task was a surprise to Nehemiah and the distress that he felt. So once he proceeded to go, once he got in his mind that I'm going, there was no turning back. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the group, what the gang was going to say, and what they allowed. And according to how this reads too, what they were basically saying is that they wanted to change, if they could, the path.
Mm-hmm. And the results.
But you can't do that once God's got his things in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are in the same mindset,
mm-hmm,
and attached to the power source.
Because
when you plug in that electric cord, you must get electricity.
That's right.
And that's what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not allowing anything to change that. God now has something to work with and to bless. And that was the plan to rebuild that wall.
Mm-hmm. That's right. What else did you guys say? That was really good. Thank you, Viv.
Not as eloquently as Viv put it, but I feel like I was going down the same path that God first, and then I'm committed personally, and the rules come in third. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, if this is God's plan, you can see his conviction, his commitment. And I don't want to get too far ahead, but if you just responded and was like, well, that's not in the rules. Mm-hmm. If all of a sudden feels like a petty fight.
That's exactly what I thought.
You know, it's just like this little tit for tat. But mm-hmm. when you start with God, mm-hmm. it's like this is a plan from God and I am following the plan. That I just felt like it really... Mm-hmm.
It trumped it.
Yeah.
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 That's how I felt too. I felt like... At the end, he says, you really have no right to Jerusalem. You don't really even belong here. Mm-hmm. If he had started with that, it would have come across petty. But instead, he did it the other way around, which to me was so impactful. He says, first, God will give us success. He just shuts it down. Like, he pulls the biggest trump card. Mm-hmm. I got God. God will give us success. So he just shuts the naysayers down with the God card. That's the way to go. And then he says, and by the way, you have no right to Jerusalem. You see what I mean? If he had, I mean, how many times have we done that? Gosh, guys, too many for me. Like, if I respond to someone who's irritating me, mm-hmm. you have no place. I have no use for you. That's down in their level. He just didn't sink down to their level. He mentioned that they have no place there, but it was like an afterthought.
Right. He
was
didn't like, lead with it.
It almost was like, doesn't even matter if you did have a right to Jerusalem. God will give us success. We know what God wants, and what you want doesn't matter. And by the way, you don't have any right to it anyway. Mm-hmm. You see, like, that I would respond always with God first to people who irritate me and scratch at me and pick at me and irritate me. Want to bring drama. I'm going to wait for chapter 6 to talk about drama because I think that's a really important thing to do. But the drama is starting here in chapter 2. And I could relate this to so many things in my life. People just say stupid stuff and they try. Sometimes they really intend to derail you. Like, they're just hateful people. And sometimes the enemy is just using them. Like, they're actually friends or people that you like most of the time, but they say something stupid and you can be completely derailed by that. But he wasn't. He came into a city. I don't get an indication that he was part of the exile, that he was, this was later. And so, you know, he loved the city, but he didn't live there. He wasn't anybody. So he's coming up against these people who are in the city and saying, no, I'm here now. God's here now. I'm doing this thing. God is going to bless it. And you really have no place here. So just off you go. I'm going to talk about chapter 3 for just a moment. Of course, in writing this, I read a lot of commentaries on Nehemiah and I read the different translations. And this is where people start to talk about Nehemiah as an example in the area of motivation and delegation and how he's such a great leader because he knew how to do it. And I think that's true. I think he did have all those gifts. But I think you see that mostly when you take Nehemiah in isolation. But when you read Haggai, yeah, and Zechariah, those are the ones who were working on the Israelites to get them motivated to rebuild while Nehemiah was getting the word to rebuild. So he's got Nehemiah wherever he is with the king in exile. And then he's also moving in the hearts of people in different places for the same purpose. So what I love about this chapter is it shows that when God is moving in our heart, in our calling, he's also moving in the hearts around us to accomplish his purpose. Because his purpose is never, ever, ever about one person. He doesn't need me to get his job done. He just doesn't. I'm a drop in the bucket in eternity. He so doesn't need me. It's never about me. And so when he calls one of us or he gives us some kind of indication, something needs to change, something needs to happen, he's already doing work around us to make sure that it happens. And I just love that. Does anybody have any examples from their own lives that they'd like to share about that? Because I hate to give all the examples from my own.
I'll give one that I gave in Bible study last week. I have a sister who, we're not the closest, but I love her dearly, and I want her to be saved. I want her to go to heaven. And I felt called to share a book with her But, you know, complicated family relationships, you're never sure how it's going to be received. And I shared emotionally with our Bible study group last week about feeling this nudge and not sure where to go with it. Bought the book, had the book, and then was surprised to learn that God was already pulling at her heart. She was already talking with another family member about a desire to find something to read. God-related, I guess. And so it was clear to me then that this wasn't just my idea. This was God is ready to work something. I don't know how long it will take or how it's going to work out, how long it'll take to play out, but that he was already at work. And it was could be no more clear to me that it was his nudge.
Mm-hmm.
And now my job was to follow and obey and just do it. Mm-hmm. So I just did it.
Mm-hmm. Where it was such a great moment.
It was an awesome moment.
That was a great example of how God weaves people together. A few people shared very different things about, we've been talking a lot in Bible study about following those little internal nudges. And so we just been talking about that. And it was like this amazing ripple effect happened through our Bible study. And people were like, one girl shared that she had asked somebody to come to church who the world would think would never respond to, yes, I would like to come to church. And she was like, you know what? I just did it. And she said, yes, I would like to come to church, which is another example of when you are following God, he's already preparing hearts around you. And then another of our girlfriends said, I've been thinking I should ask somebody to church. I'm going to text her right now. And then before we left Bible study, that person texted her back and said, I would like to come to church. And it was like this.
I've been thinking about it.
It was like this. And we all were like so motivated to follow those little nudges that you sometimes are just going to ignore. But that's God working in your heart, and he's positioned and ready. If we would just do the foolish thing or the crazy thing or the thing that doesn't make sense. You know, Isaiah 55 says, our ways are not his ways and his thoughts are not our thoughts. Like, just do it. I've come to learn that if the less sense it makes to me, the more it might be God, because his thoughts are not my thoughts. So if it doesn't make sense to me, maybe that must be God. The things that make sense to me are probably me. I'm glad you shared that. But that was a great Bible study.
Yeah.
How about any other examples, or do you have like a theory of what that might look like in our current culture?
Well, I will share a little bit about my work. And the thing I probably identify the most with Nehemiah is being unqualified and being pulled into a position. So when I met my husband, who has been doing biblically responsible investing at that time for 15 years, I had been away from the church for 20 years. To think that I would, one, marry him, but two, come into this business of biblically responsible investing, I mean, at the time was just, I couldn't even grasp it. I just would say, you're so churchy. I don't think that I can do this. But as I learned about biblical investing, there are certain business practices or companies that we don't invest in because we feel like they don't align with biblical principles. So things like abortion, pornography, or things that cause other people to be addicted. So tobacco, alcohol, and gambling. And we look to just invest in companies that want to be a blessing in the world. So for me, I am a pretty logical person. And so when I recommitted my life to Christ, that just seemed like a very logical way that I would be investing. But everybody doesn't think that way. In fact, many people who had been investing this way were discouraged. They were like, we've been doing this for 15 years. Why isn't everybody on board with this? And I was like, well, we need to get the word out. We need to talk about this more. And so I don't really see myself as a visionary, but I'm a person of action and execution. So, you know, I just started making a plan, like, how are we going to start to get the word out? And in fact, I wrote a book about biblical investing and got to go out and speak on the radio. And what has happened is so encouraging to me that more and more Christian financial advisors are starting to say, hey, I think there is something to this. So you know, when you talk about God working in, how come this didn't start happening sooner? But for me, it's been kind of miraculous mm-hmm. to see things happen quickly and just to really open hearts. People who a year ago said to me, this is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. And then I get a call this year to say, I changed my mind and this is the way I need to invest. And can you help me to change my whole practice mm-hmm. so I can invest this mm-hmm. way? So that's not me. I'm really, really clear about that. But it's so exciting mm-hmm. when you see how God is working in the hearts of others to make big changes.
And humbling.
Yeah.
And humbling if he's using you in any way.
Yeah.
Do you experience, I'll just take a sidebar, and if you're leading in ways like that, do you experience the push-pull of, oh, I did something good versus God is doing something good?
I think, you know, there's some times where I get very excited about like certain milestones, but I am really clear, at least in this part of my life, I am really clear that it's all God because of how my personal life has been completely transformed. Mm. I struggled in many, many areas before I recommitted my life to Christ, and my life is so much better now in every single way that it is easy for me to recognize all good things coming from God.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes sense.
It reminds me of a piece that I was studying that basically says that when we're all, you're conceived, God puts in us a gift. He puts in us a plan. He puts in us the desire to do a certain thing. And when you are not doing that, you're living below your worth and your value. Once you have discovered what your calling is, your gifting is, your worth and your value is, you rise above. Not only are you rising above, but you're allowing the glory of God to come out of you. In there's a phrase that says right now too, and in the cemetery, there's so many wealth because people has died with books in them they have not written, songs that was not sang, you know, investments that what didn't come to pass, you know, things that wasn't done. And so now that you have married this man of God that's led you down a different path and that you have seen your gifting and you're rising to what God's called you to, you're now changing the world by even the book you wrote. And the things that you're doing and how you're moving things. So you're changing the atmosphere by walking into the gift that you were given from birth.
Mm-hmm. And it's like what I was saying about Amy. We all have something God's doing it through us, but we have to be available. Mm-hmm. Sorry for interrupting.
So we all have that. And I noticed that, you know, some of the things that we're all saying is that we're noticing that with Nehemiah. Nehemiah was given this gift. This was the plan before he was birthed. He didn't know it. He didn't know that was his calling because he was a cupbearer, a servant, a high servant, but a servant no less. And even though he was still serving in the capacity of helping to engineer the wall, he didn't have the engineering degree. He was a cupbearer in the kingdom.
Hi, it's Holly again. I'm so glad you listened today. We really believe these Bible studies can be a good resource no matter where you are in your spiritual journey. If you're new to the Bible, curious but not ready to go to church, this is a way you can explore. Or if you're a seasoned veteran of the faith, each time you study, you gain something more. Either way, we hope you found something in today's study that blessed you. We are listener supported, so we do rely on your prayers and financial support. During this series, we'd like to send you a book called The Passionate Mom: Dare to Parent in Today's World. It's written by Susan Merrill, and she takes the example of Nehemiah's leadership and helps us see how we can parent with these same guiding principles. We want to send that to you for a donation of any amount. Again, that's studywithfriends.org/donate. And just note Nehemiah on your check or in the note box provided online. Honestly, hearing from you in any way makes our day. We always pass the email around and celebrate that you cared enough to reach out. So if you're blessed by us on this station, please let us know with an email to info@studywithfriends.org. Make sure to include the station you're listening to. We believe strongly in the local church. If you don't regularly attend Sunday worship and a small group Bible study, please find one. Make sure the church is teaching the Bible every week and in every small group situation. See you next time on Study with Friends.